I'm John Kroll. Thursday evening, the folks on WFYI's TV side of the operation will premiere an important new documentary, Attucks, the School That Opened a City. Today on No Limits, we're going to talk not just about the documentary, but the school that inspired it and changed this city, this state, this nation, and this world in the process. Joining me will be Attucks High School Principal Lauren Franklin and Kala Murtada, IUPUI's Vice Chancellor in the Office of Community Engagement. Please join the conversation. Call 866-476-3881, email nolimits@wfyi.org, or find us on social media. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're going to be talking today about an important new documentary that's going to be premiering this Thursday evening on the TV side of WFYI. It's called Attucks, the School That Opened the City. We're going to use this also as an opportunity to talk about the school and its impact, not just on this city and state, but really the nation and the world as well. If you'd like to join the conversation, particularly, I want to make this a special invitation. If you are an Attucks alum in any way and want to talk about this remarkable story and share your Attucks story, we would love to hear from you. Phone number is 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Lauren Franklin. She is Attucks High School's principal. And Kala Murtada. She is the Associate Vice Chancellor of the Office of Community Engagement at IUPUI. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's good to have you here. I'm going to start the conversation. The producer, writer, and narrator of the documentary, Ted Green, could not be with us today. He's actually working on his next project. But we caught up with him a little while ago, and I want him to talk and got a chance to ask him some questions about the genesis of this documentary. And I'd like to start the conversation by listening to that. So, Ted, talk to me a little bit about what brought you to do this documentary.
It started actually 11 years ago doing a basketball documentary. And to keep the story short, essentially when I went over to the school for the first time, I met with Dr. Gilbert Taylor, who was in charge of the Crispus Attucks Museum. And he very forcefully told me that there was a lot more to the school than the basketball teams of the 1950s. And he was a 55 graduate himself. And so that sort of got me thinking, but really what really got me going was walking the halls over there and looking at the pictures of all the students, all the graduates on the walls, and then seeing alumni also look at those pictures and point out their mothers and their fathers and their aunts and their grandparents. It hit me right then that this was more than a school. It was a community. It was actually sort of the race in Indianapolis in the 20th century. And I thought, man, if I get another chance, I want to try to capture that. So
now, was because the basketball program there and the basketball story in the mid 50s is such an almost like an epic tale unto itself, did that kind of crowd out the sun when it came to telling the other elements of the Crispus Attucks story?
I think that's frankly crowded out the sun for the 60 years since then. I believe after researching this heavily and speaking with so many graduates that really I believe the legacies of particularly education, but also in military and in the arts, particularly music, are all as or more impressive than the legacy of the sports teams there. The sports teams wouldn't have happened but for all the challenges overcome in the 25 years the school was in operation before that came about.
That was Ted Green. He is the producer, writer, and narrator of a really fine new documentary I've had the privilege of previewing it, called Attucks, the School That Opened the City. It is a documentary about Crispus Attucks' storied history and the impact it made not just on Indianapolis, but the world surrounding Indianapolis. He's not able to join us, but we did catch up with him. We're going to hear a little bit more from him. later. And we have with us in the studio Lauren Franklin and Callum Hurtado to talk about addicts and its impact. And I'm going to start, Callum, with you. I mean, how do we, when we talk about addicts, how would you sort of summarize, what addicts means both to, say, African-American residents of this city and then what it meant to the city?
The idea that addicts had meaning beyond basketball is where we need to start.
Yeah. Although the basketball story is pretty remarkable.
And I love the way that you said it crowded out the sun. In part because what addicts meant to the city was it had to confront a racist environment. It had to create a space where the gifts and talents and the abilities of educators and students and communities where black children came from could really be evidenced. And it was a forced segregation. It was not one that was looked upon as a desirable outcome for change. And yet it turned around and showed, as you said, to the world that black people not only could achieve, but could achieve despite all of the odds. And the odds meaning inequity in terms of resources, inequity in terms of opportunities. And yet, with given the types of teachers that came to addicts, where they were given an opportunity to teach, their expectations, their beliefs about the abilities of the young people that confronted them, but also their commitment to change made a difference. Now, to those who did not have to attend addicts, it was looked upon as a site where those people would go. It was not looked upon as a favorable site for educating all children. And so the other schools that remained segregated, and that was the intent, continued in their own excellent way. But addicts showed, and the teachers and the families and the students showed, the possibilities for change. And that's a powerful story to tell.
Lauren, I would think it's got to be a little bit intimidating to step into having to lead a school with a history like that. I can't even think of a parallel here where you're talking about what is stewardship of a cultural icon.
Absolutely. Quite daunting, and intimidating is a good word. We know that the addicts alumni love their school. They love it with a passion, and I have a great deal of respect for how they feel about the school and everything that it meant to them. All four of my grandparents attended Crispus Attucks, as well as my parents, several aunts.
So you're a legacy and of long standing.
I am, and so not only do I have just the day-to-day pressures, but I also have that family pressure as well.
So do they say, now, don't screw up what we started here, basically?
Absolutely.
Okay.
And so my 92-year-old grandmother is very protective of Crispus Attucks, as much as she's protective of me. So
okay.
So definitely, I've got that. My family does weigh in heavily on some of my decision-making.
So talk to me a little bit about, as Calla pointed out, the odds were in many ways stacked against this school and stacked, and saying the school depersonalizes it, stacked against the human beings who attended the school, stacked against the human beings who worked at the school, stacked against all of those who. Why did it succeed in the spectacular fashion that it did? And I understand that the success was not cost-free, that there were, in fact, many addict students. There's considerable evidence that they either excelled or they failed, and there wasn't a whole lot of in-between. But why did it succeed at the level that it did? I'm going to start with you on that one, Lauren.
I think that there was such a commitment and dedication to education within the African-American community and where they knew that a solid education could take them. And And there was that commitment among the staff and the faculty to their students, as well as the parents. So it was really an entire community effort, and the students soaked that up. The students felt that. So I think that the adults set the tone, and the students took it and ran with it. And so there was no other, they had no other choice but to excel. Teachers let them know. I know my parents often talk about their teachers let them know the odds were stacked against them in society. So they had to be the best. They had to be better than. This was not just an average school because they had something to prove. I think that the faculty and the students knew they had something to prove to the larger society. And they did that. You know, they took it and they ran with it, and they were absolutely able to make lemonade out of the lemons that they were given. So there was just that pride there that they had in knowing that, and that this self-confidence and knowing that they could do it, and they were going to prove and to show people that they could succeed and excel.
Kala, same question to you. Why did it? I mean, there were obviously other African-American high schools in this state and in this country. I don't think any of them has really got the national profile, though, that Attucks does.
And I think part of it has to do with what Lauren just mentioned, the belief that education would uplift the race, mm-hmm. especially during a time when racism was so prevalent and so obvious, where you could shop and where you could not shop. Where you could actually buy the things that you needed was tied to where you could go get educated, where you could live. Where you could live was tied to where you could be educated. So this whole idea of social uplift and the opportunities that could come was a driving belief in all of those people who were educators. And I want to talk a little bit more about what education has meant to African Americans. Mm-hmm. Given the opportunity to really think about what we want to do and how we want to impact our society, we have to think about a society that has been, as you said, stacked against mm-hmm. People of color broadly. And in this time, when we think about that era, the unwavering belief that we have to do something to change our circumstances, that it wasn't going to happen through somebody else's efforts, that unwavering belief that we had to make a difference was that of the teachers and the family members and the community at large.
If you were just joining us, we're talking about a remarkable new documentary called Attucks, the School That Opened the City. It's going to premiere on WFYI's TV side this Thursday evening at 8. And we're talking about Attucks in general. I think one of the things that impressed me about watching the documentary, though, is that sense of pride seemed to take off almost from the beginning with the school, though. Even though it should be noted African-American leaders objected to its creation because they thought, okay, this is sort of an acceptance of segregation. What accounted for that? I mean, there is a real kind of defiant edge to the Attucks story.
The educators knew, as did the families, that all things being equal, you have a better chance. But all things were not equal. The mm-hmm. resources that were given to black schools were not those given to white schools. Educators knew that. And so being able to say, all right, we want an integrated school was not just because of being next to black people and next to white people was going to make a difference. It was understanding that the site and the resources and the abilities and the opportunities would be prevalent in this other setting. And that's why some black people fought hard for an integrated setting. Others recognize, no, the white ice isn't any colder than the black ice. Mm-hmm. And so how do you really pay attention to making sure that we had the excellence in terms of resources and opportunities as well?
So the thinking was, if we're all in the same boat, everyone will make sure then that the boat does not leak, right?
That's right.
Is the essence of the thought. Is that, real quickly, because we're headed toward a break here, Lauren, is that sense of pride still there at Attucks?
I think that it is in some adults and some students, and I think that that's something that we're working towards.
Okay.
Because we know, again, our adults set the tone, but we also are living in a different time period where education is not as valued and seen as the community uplift that it used to be when it was in the 20s or 30s. So I think we're struggling just in general as a society with having that sort of pride.
That's one of your leadership challenges, it sounds like. We are talking about Attucks, the school that opened the city, here on No Limits. I am John Kroll. You are listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking today about an important new documentary that's going to premiere on WFYI TV Thursday evening at 8. It's called Attucks, the School That Opened the City. We're going to be talking about not just the documentary, but really the school that inspired it and its impact on Indianapolis, Indiana, the United States, and the world. My guests are Lauren Franklin. She is Attucks High School principal, and Calla Murtada. She is associate vice chancellor of the Office of Community Engagement at IUPUI. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at wfyi. Well, we heard a little briefly earlier in the program from Ted Green, who produced, wrote, and narrated the documentary. And we caught up with him. He's not able to be with us today because he is working on his next project right now, which also has an Indiana connection. But we're going to listen to a little bit more of that conversation with him. What lessons did you learn from doing the documentary about Crispus Attucks?
Well, I chuckled a little bit when you first started that because I'm 49. So I started this when I was
just a child.
Well, I started it when I was 47, and I've learned more in the last 2 years, certainly about race relations, than I did in the 47 years before that. I walked away from all that research just incredibly inspired by what happened inside those brick walls over there, starting in 1927 when they brought in just the finest teachers you could imagine. And those teachers had such high expectations for kids who had never had those expectations in school of them before. And it didn't work for every student, but boy, it worked for a lot. And for those students, helped change this city.
Did it alter any perceptions you had of Attucks?
Well, I think it altered it in the sense that, I went into it, like most people, thinking the basketball team was the main thing. And the basketball team was an incredible thing under Coach Ray Crow, and certainly the influence spread far beyond the court. But I just didn't understand really what went on in that school educationally, and the pride and the community pride. That certainly wasn't the case at my high school. I've never met anybody whose high school had the same kind of situation that those folks benefited from over there at Attucks.
That was Ted Green. He is the producer, writer, and narrator of an important new documentary called Attucks, the School That Opened the City. It's going to be premiering on WFYI-TV this Thursday evening at 8. We're talking about the school itself. I'm going to ask the same question that I asked to Ted when we talked. What lessons can we draw from the Attucks experience here? I'm going to start with you on that one, Lauren.
So I think that there's a variety of lessons that we can learn. One of the things I think is pretty neat is that our students were able to screen the film, and their response to the film was really impressive, and it was very, for lack of a better word, it was very just inspirational. The students, it was almost like an instant pride, knowing their history and knowing that they had to perform the way that other alum had performed in the past. I think it was helpful for me as a principal to look at the the other school leadership, what Mr. Nocox, the very first principal, had done and his dedication. Again, just very inspirational for me as far as taking a stand on what we know our students need and being able to make certain that our kids get that. And I think for our faculty were inspired as well because, again, the high expectations that Ted mentioned earlier, that was just key throughout. And that was a huge part of the success at the school. And so it's so important, so critical that our faculty members have that high expectations for our students. So I think students or faculty and even parents, I think we all have something to learn from the film.
Are there educational lessons that we can draw from this that, you know, in terms of curricula and really educating young people in what is now a different world? Are there still some lessons that we can apply, Koala?
Well, that's one of the reasons why Ted and Clayton Taylor here from WFYI came together with a group of educators of educators, Butler University and IUPUI, to say we need to work on a curriculum for this documentary. And so we had folks, I'd really like to be even respectful of the ones who worked on this, naming them, Susan Adams from over at Butler University, Sarah Bankart from IUPUI, a doc student. We had Kelly Bradley, Crystal Morton, a professor in mathematics education, Brooke Kendall Cisco, who was over at Butler, Tamara Jackson, faculty member over at IUPUI, Pat Payne, who's an administrator on special assignment for IPS, all of these individuals who cared deeply about what happens with curriculum, beyond curriculum as what do you know and able to do, but how do you evaluate, how do you assess, how do you develop inquiry around a historical moment in time? And so looking at what we can learn today from what happened in the past, rather than having historical amnesia, what we can do today to really think about the implications for this moment in time. And so as curriculum thinkers, we had to really say, how do we change the curriculum from being stuff that you just put in front of young people and tell them, okay, now this is what you know. We used a powerful pedagogical approach called historical inquiry to say, and because we know inquiry is a way of fostering more learning, how do you actually raise questions about that period of time and what its implications are for today? And so understanding that the young person may have no clue about what is and what was prevalent then and what it seems for today, how it plays out for today. And so as we thought about the curriculum, we began to think, okay, educators now need to do some self-reflection. Where did they come from? What are their beliefs about the young people? As Lauren pointed out, what are their expectations? And so, in brief, understanding that that past had implications for us to rethink what we're doing with education today, because we now know that with high expectations, community engagement, when educators come to the table with family and caregivers of young people, that collective can make a difference.
Do young people understand these days the addicts, the significance of the addicts story? I mean, I'll say this. I know it's dragging the whole basketball thing back in, but, you know, the point of the addicts basketball story, that was a significant piece too. It shouldn't, just as it should not crowd out all of the other aspects of addict story, it also shouldn't be pushed aside by those other parts too. But the significance, and the reason I'm sort of asking this question, is my daughter, a couple of years ago, traveled down to Attucks to play at her school, played a basketball game on the Attucks gym. And she literally could not understand why I was getting so excited about all of this. And a confession here for the audience. There have been many, many great basketball players over the past 50-some years. Oscar Robertson still is the greatest basketball player who ever lived. He was my favorite, and that's not likely to change. So I tried to say, explain to her, you don't understand what this school is, what it means. And some of that is that for her, if you're talking about the 1950s and the 1940s, and I'm not disparaging her, I might as well also be talking about ancient Greece and the Sumerians, because, you know, it's just ancient past stuff as far as she's concerned, and a lot of the children of her generation, which makes it very hard for them to grasp not just the basketball piece of it, but why addicts matters so much. Lauren.
I do think that it's difficult for our students to have that sort of understanding. One of the things that really moved me was watching the students watch the film. Mm-hmm. And again, I spoke earlier about just the instant pride it seemed at the end of the movie that they had. It was so neat to see, because it's almost as if they stood taller. And it's like, wow, I really know what it means to attend Crispus Attucks. And they just, it's like, Miss Franklin, I had no idea. Miss Franklin, I had no idea. And so I think that part of the beauty of this documentary is that it does give our young people a sense of that history that they otherwise would not have. We do have an amazing museum, the Crispus Attucks Museum, that's housed in our building. And our students do have an opportunity to go through there. But we also know that this is an age where the students really relate to. They like movies. They want to see. They want entertainment. And so by having a documentary that spells things out so crystal clear for them, I think that it was moving for them to note and to see. So I think that, yes, they care, but I don't know that we've given them enough opportunities to engage with the history. And so that's one of the reasons why the curriculum is so important, and why it's so important that the students had the opportunity to view the documentary.
How do we reengage with that sense of historical memory, of making people realize, to use William Faulkner's words, the past isn't dead. In fact, it isn't even the past.
That's right. Such an important quote. When you think about the challenges that we're confronting today, mm-hmm. our young people are aware of what's going on today. They're tweeting, they're looking at things at Instagram. They're constantly communicating, and they see the social media as a way of getting information. So they realize that there are injustices that are occurring right now. There's racism that is occurring right now. There are huge inequities occurring right now. So tying the past to the present is not as bad as people think it is. The historical piece is very significant right now. The thing is that when we're facing complex problems, however, we just can't say history is over there, math is over there, reading is over here. An interdisciplinary approach is necessary for complex problems. And so when teachers understand that we bring together these ideas, mathematical thinking, what happened then? Creating maps, what happened in one community and what happened in another? Supporting comparison and contraction. So those kinds of things help to make the learning of the history much more relevant today. And they can tie what things happened then to what happens now in the news, because it's right there in their faces.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about the upcoming premiere of a great new documentary called Attucks, the School That Opened the City. It's going to premiere on WFYI-TV Thursday evening at 8. If you'd like to join this conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. So, you know, one of the things that fascinates me about, and has always fascinated me about Attucks, and that fascination was renewed by watching the documentary again, is that in some ways the teachers in that, and I say this as an educator myself, the teachers in that school succeeded in ways by resorting at some level to methods that probably would get us in a lot of trouble today if we tried to use them. Yeah, you're laughing because you know what I'm talking
Absolutely.
About.
Absolutely.
What are the lessons to be drawn from that? Lauren, you were laughing the hardest, so I'm going with you first.
I think that it just serves as evidence of how much our community and our society has changed, and how we sometimes get rid of things that were successful in the past, kind of throwing the baby out with the bathwater. And so some best practices in education and even in parenting, they're tried and true, and perhaps we need to revisit some things. And so, like you said, we can't do everything that they were able to do back in the day, but perhaps if we had those sort of freedoms again in the public school setting, and not just Crispus Attucks, but just in public education as a whole, then we would look at things a little differently, as well as what happens in our homes and parents who struggle with their own children in their homes. And so just my personal opinion, but I definitely think that we've thrown some things out that we maybe should revisit and rethink and think back through.
Well, in part, I mean, you know, and this gets to sort of the irony of history, too, in that a school that started out as a symbol of racial oppression succeeded in part because the educators appealed to racial pride instead. And those are the kinds of things, really, we should not be talking. You know, we don't have the freedom to talk about in the front of an integrated classroom these days. What lessons do you draw from that?
Two things come to mind immediately. There is nothing wrong with feeling really great respect and regard and love for who you are.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing wrong with that. But when you're a student and you're placed in an environment where that's not reciprocated from the educators around you, then that's the problem. And it's a problem that happens far too often. One of the things that the educators did in Attucks, too, was maintain a close relationship with the caregivers of the students. So there was immediate communication. Your child did not do what they were supposed to do. That information was conveyed. And so how do we change
today
that
there'd
time?
Be FERPA problems with that. But as a whole, yeah, we're chuckling about that. But there is a in some ways, Attucks was the idea of what we call a community or even full-service school well before that notion had a name. Lauren?
Absolutely. Because a community school, and Dr. Murtaugh and I worked together with that concept before, but it's all about meeting the need, the wraparound services, and meeting the need, every need of a student. And like you said just a moment ago, then we don't necessarily have all of the resources or all of the cooperation from the parties that we need in order to meet every need of all of our students.
Kalda, could an Attucks-like environment succeed today?
There are attempts around the country right now to do just that, to say we need to have teachers who understand cultural engagement, that we need to have teachers, educators, and family members, and students, and wraparound services working together, community engagement. That's happening in a lot of places, and we see the success. What gets interrogated, however, is whether or not it really serves the purpose of advancing a democratic society.
Mm-hmm.
That's the question that keeps coming up. If we segregate and say this group needs to be served in a different way, then the pushback is, well, why this group and not that group? And that's what an ongoing challenge is.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about an important new documentary, Attucks, the School That Opened the City, that's going to premiere on WFYI-TV this Thursday evening at 8. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or you can track us down on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Lauren Franklin, she is Attucks High School's principal, and Kalda Murtaugh, she is Associate Vice Chancellor, Office of Community Engagement at IUPUI. I am John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about the premiere of an important documentary called Addicts, The School That Opened the City. It's going to premiere on WFYI-TV this Thursday evening at 8. My guests are Lauren Franklin. She is the Addicts High School principal, and Calla Murtada. She is associate vice chancellor, office community engagement at IUPUI, and also part of the School of Ed faculty there. The producer, narrator, writer of the documentary, Ted Green, wasn't able to join us today because he's off working on his next project. But I did catch up with him a couple of days ago to talk with him about the documentary and what it means. And we're going to hear a little bit of that conversation right now. What do you hope people will take away after seeing this documentary?
Well, ultimately, I hope people are inspired. I'd say especially children, students, and teachers are inspired. We had the opportunity to screen the film the day after the premiere at the Walker Theater. We screened it actually in the Crispus Attucks Auditorium. I wasn't able to stay to the end because I had to run back over to the Walker for another screening there. But a lot of the teachers said that kids walked out of that auditorium, and we really didn't know what to expect when we showed it for them. Maybe it was too long, maybe it was too deep, but those kids walked out of that auditorium with a sense of pride and even responsibility that they didn't have when they went in. One particular student noted that, you know, she hopes that one day she can be one of those faces on the walls that people look back on and said, wow, look what this person went on to do in life.
What were the parts of it that they responded to most powerfully?
Well, they responded very powerfully when the principal read a letter written by Barack Obama praising the school up front. That was a big hit, both at the Walker Theater and certainly over at the school. But I think that they were just inspired by, they didn't understand, nor did I going in, the obstacles faced, not just in the 1920s, which is sort of the nadir for Indiana in terms of race relations, but also all the way up through the 50s and through the 60s with a lot of things that were going on in the city, and how despite that, these students who had problems as big or bigger than the students of today were able to rise above that. I think that's what we hope people can get out of that it is still a possible, and that Crispus Attucks is a fantastic example of what can be done.
That was Ted Green. He is the producer, writer, and narrator of a great new documentary, and I say that having seen it, called Addicts, The School That Opened the City. It's going to premiere on WFYI-TV this Thursday evening at 8. I'm going to ask the two of you, I'm presuming you've both seen the documentary, right?
Correct.
Okay. Same question I asked Ted. What do you hope people will take away from seeing it?
I think that, and Ted talks about responsibility, I think that one of the things we want to see is that our young people, as well as the adults in the community, have an opportunity to see that change can occur, despite the odds, that we can really be individuals and collectively responsible for bringing about an improved social condition. We see the pervasiveness of inequity. So what does it mean that a student seeing the documentary or the adults seeing the documentary know that they can be agents of change?
Lauren.
Ditto, too.
Okay.
But absolutely, I think that, as Ted said, it's an inspiration. I want my students to have hope. I want them to have dreams and aspirations. And seeing that someone who walked in the same hallways, who sat in the same classrooms, who ate in the same cafeteria and played in the same gym, that there's an entire population of people who are successful and they can join those ranks. And so my desire, and one of the things that Ted will tell you, I was very adamant that my students be allowed to see the film as soon as possible. But it's because that I really was hopeful that they would be inspired by the film and become better students and again, be able to just develop those dreams and those aspirations. Because so often our students behave in a way that shows us that they don't have dreams and they don't have hopes and aspirations. And so being able to give those to them was something that I think that's very powerful that any educator or parent can do for a child.
Were there things that surprised you in watching the documentary and in learning? Because I'm going to say, none of us were around in 1927, or was around, I should say, to be grammatically correct. None of us was around in 1927. So were there things that you learned by seeing it that either surprised you or, if nothing else, kind of illuminated your further understanding of something you were aware of but still didn't quite entirely grasp? Lauren, I'm going to start with you.
I thoroughly enjoyed the documentary. I definitely learned a lot. I think that, I mean, there were so many things, starting with just the history of, so I had read about the history and the origin of addicts, but seeing it, I think Ted was able to bring out different parts of it, and how powerful the Klan was at that time. And I think, you know, my grandfather was in the graduating class of 1929 and had to be removed from Tech and forced to come to Crispus Attucks as a junior. And he hit on those things, but I think that Ted was able to bring out just how devastating that was for some of the students to have to leave their home school and go to Crispus Attucks and the resistance that there was. There were so many things that I learned. Again, just the stories of the educators and how talented they were. And you know this, but then there's something to be said as far as having people put voice to it and the alumni and all the stories. So the entire thing is something that everyone should watch just because it's so illuminating of our community and who we are as a school community and as a city.
Calla.
One thing I've got to drive home to point is that these are educators who were well educated because they could not teach in other places. Mm-hmm. They were well prepared to be teachers. Today, we have some educators who are placed into schools with children of color, and they are not well prepared to be educators. And so we have shortcut approaches to education. And what stood out for me clearly was that these were individuals who came in and they had a background of understanding in depth the knowledge that they needed to share and how to best teach. And that's critically important in this day and time when we have people saying anyone can teach, or just have a degree, and that needs to be interrupted. Another thing, though, the significant impact, not just in the sports, which I know you love with the basketball, but we've got to...
I'm a big O fan. I'm not going to apologize for that.
Don't you dare. Don't you dare. But the whole idea that the military was affected, that generals were educated, mm-hmm. who led this country, who understood...
Opera singers, jazz musicians.
Singers. Exactly. Yeah. And so the breadth of the impact was just so significant. And you come away with that understanding that leaders came out of this school that influenced socially, economically, culturally, in every way, this society. And so the significance of a well-educated citizenry and how it can make a difference across the racial lines was just incredible.
Yeah. One of the things that impressed me about this, and Ted alluded to it in one of the second snippet we played in the last segment, where he talked about that sense of commitment. And Lauren, you have talked about the feeling that the alumni have and all of that. One of the things that dazzled me about the documentary is all of these really, really important people mm-hmm. carved out time, came back home to talk about addicts and what addicts had meant to them. And, you know, Ted said, you know, nobody felt that way about the school I went to. I'm not sure, you know, and it at some level, that in addition to the superb educators, I think is probably just in my probably less well-informed opinion than yours, is one of the factors that led to that record of of success is that there was a tremendous sense of esprit de corps, very talented people pushing each other and creating a network so that they clearly were helping each other along the way too. Is it possible for us to get back to that now in a school environment? Helen?
Clearly it happens. Mm-hmm. It can happen. And earlier I mentioned the fact that it does happen in different places across the country. What happens also, parallel to that, however, is that we don't always foster that mm-hmm. sense of we have to get this done. This is not just about a test score. This is about fostering students' learning so that they become citizens that give back to the community. We also have to think about where people had to live at that moment in time. People had to live in the communities where they were. Mm-hmm. Remember, we were talking about having these conversations, this connectedness. Mm-hmm. Well, that didn't happen by happenstance. You had to live where you were. And so being able to foster that within the school is critical. The community school notion that you and Lauren referenced, but also understanding that it happens in part because really people believe that it has to happen. That dedication, that connectivity, that responsibility. It's a cultural sensitivity as well. People talk about culturally responsive pedagogy, culturally engaging. But it's also understanding what does it mean to care about our citizenry overall.
If you're just joining us, we are talking about Crispus Attucks and its impact on the city, state, nation, and world. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimitswfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, on Twitter at WFYI, or you can do what a listener named Art has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Art, welcome to the program.
Hello?
Hello, Art. You're on the air.
Yes.
What's on
my
your mind?
My question that came to my mind was, how do we leverage this opportunity, this premiere? And the first thing I thought was to get it to be watched by all the schools so they could think about it and talk about it together with all the PTO organizations and all the colleges and universities and the students there. And then I thought, well, the next thing to do is, what do we do with that? Well, we could use it to, brainstorming effort, which could be focused on an essay competition. You could have the students, and then you could have not only the essay competition, but then a judging. You could have the students be one of the groups that would judge their own essays. And the faculty, you're going to have the students comment and select, the faculty comment and select, the alumni comment and select, the whole community comments and selects. And you could try to expand the brainstorming to the entire Indianapolis community.
Thanks very much.
And from that, then boil down all kinds of strategic and have contact information for all those people. So if you wanted, you could go back and you could enlist people to get involved in actually trying to help work on specific programming areas or strategic opportunities or what have you.
Art, let me let Kala respond to that because she wants to jump on your point. Thanks very much for the call.
Indeed.
And the suggestion. Yeah.
Your point is very well taken. And to WFYI's credit, they have worked to develop a discussion guide along with bringing the curriculum guide to bear. And the discussion guide is just for the purpose that you raise, Art, so that we can have community discussions about what does a documenting of that history bring to us. The piece of the discussion that I think is most important is that it's open-ended. It's not intended to make people feel that, oh, I'm a fragile white person, I feel guilty. It's intended to say we really have to discuss what do we want for our communities here in central Indiana, across the state, nationally, especially in this time of political change. What does it mean for us to have these kinds of meaningful discussions about equity, about race, about social justice? And if we can have these kinds of conversations, maybe it can move the needle in the types of ways that we can make a difference for our communities.
In watching it, I mean, I had a lot of responses, but obviously I'm a Caucasian male, so my responses and the experiences I have had are going to predispose me to even so, there were parts of it in watching it where I felt an awful lot of anger, thinking, okay, why? Just why? Was that part of the viewing experience for the two of you as well? Yeah, silence does not work so well on radio, ladies, sadly.
We both looked at each other because
I know.
Part of it was, you know, for African Americans,
yeah,
we've had to deal with racism and social upheaval all of our lives. And so when we look at and see it clearly documented as a part of the historical fiber mm-hmm. of this community and in the larger nation, it doesn't shock us.
No.
What it does do is say, okay, we still have work to do, significant work to do. Lauren?
Absolutely. The significant work to do. So, again, that sense of responsibility that you spoke of earlier. So it's making certain that we have the right teachers in front of our students. It's making certain that we have parent workshops that are helpful for our families. It's making certain that our students have, that we have the right partnerships with community resources. And so we're making certain that our students get everything they need in order to be successful. So that sense of responsibility, because we recognize that there is so much work that we still have to do.
And it's surfacing. The racism is still surfacing, and we have to be honest about that. It's a difficult conversation, and the reason why I talked about privilege mm-hmm. and fragility is because when we put those things on the table, we can really begin to say, well, what does it mean to change? What does it mean for us to not only be angry, but to act and to fight for peace? It's interesting. We can use those two words together. It takes a struggle to end in peace. So
well,
how do we do that?
And I guess where I was going with this is because Attucks is now an integrated school. You're going to have students who mm-hmm. are not African American, have not lived that experience. They go back out of watching the movie. What were their responses like, Lauren? And we have to go fairly quickly because, unfortunately, we're getting close on time.
Right. They had similar responses. I think, you know, it was very similar to those of my African-American students, just kind of in awe in watching the movie and again, in the responsibility, like, wow, I'm a Crispus Attucks student. This means something. How will I contribute to the history of Crispus Attucks?
I'm afraid that will have to be the last word. It's amazing how quickly an hour goes, isn't it? I would like to thank my guests, Lauren Franklin. She is Attucks High School principal. And Calla Murtada. She is the Associate Vice Chancellor, Office of Community Engagement at IUPUI, as well as a member of the School of Education faculty. They're also like to thank Ted Green for sharing his time with us a while ago to talk about this documentary, Attucks, the School That Opened the City. I am John Kroll. You have been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Executive producer, Michelle Johnson. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive media coordinator, Scott McAllister. Technical producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And board engineer, Joe Hatcher. Abby Terzini screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.